Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warriors Radio Network.
I love this song, but it happens to be appropriate for what we're about to do here. That's Frankie Lane. The TV show was Rawhide. I can really actually sing the living hell out of the song, but I'm not going to do this because there we go. Susie Landolfi, spelled P-H-I, should be with F, but somebody Ellis Island changed it, joins me. Susie, thanks for doing this on All Marine Radio. How are you?
I'm good, and I used to watch Rawhide.
Everybody did. Come on, there was good-looking guys, there was horses. Come on,
yes,
everybody.
What's about to Welch, right?
My favorite show, other than Bonanza, ever on television. The Susie does, how do you say it, Susie? Equine therapy?
Isn't that silly that we say that instead of just we use horses to help us heal and help us be better humans? So, yeah,
silly.
Like I said, I have, you know, so many equines, but it is called equine therapy. The only difference for us, Michael, at Boulder Crest is that we don't do therapy. We absolutely do activities with the horses because they will teach us about connection. They'll teach us to be congruent, and they'll teach us to connect on an honest level. Horses never lie.
That's interesting. Wow. Okay, yeah. So everybody needs to know, you heard Susie say Boulder Crest. I met Susie through Josh, and he told me, hey, you need to have Susie on the program. So I said, who is this Susie person? So I had to discover who Susie was, and so we met, and so before we came on, she sufficiently scarred me, and now we'll try to do an interview in spite of my emotional baggage that she's dredging up. So anyway, we have to learn a little bit about you before we can decide if we should believe you and take you seriously. So we will, because, you know, we will judge you immediately.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So first of all, born and raised where?
So I was born and raised 20 miles north of Boston in Beverly, Massachusetts, right near Salem. Marblehead, that whole North Shore is what we like to say in Boston. Both parents from Danvers, Massachusetts, right next door, all part of the Salem Village witch trial thing, of which my mother is a direct descendant of that whole witch trial history.
I thought all the witches went away. People survived?
Well, there never were any, so that's the real story. It was just
resentment. You know what? That's what all the witches say.
Right. So that's where I grew up.
All right. So you grew up there, and tell me about what comes first. Do you get interested in horses first? Do you go to college first?
I go to college first.
Okay. Where do you go to college?
I went to Middlebury College in Vermont. Got married, ran off to Brasilia. My ex-husband and I did a bunch of work there, and I continued some of my education.
Would you get your degree in?
So, theater.
I was one of those people
because I actually grew up in a mixed-race family, which is really interesting. My stepdad is Native American, Black, and Italian, and they had a dancing school. So as a kid, I learned how to tap dance and do all this dance. So I was into dance and theater and all of that. So I did that, went to Australia, came back, and later in life found horses. Did a lot of things.
So
even in the film business.
You weren't one of those girls who, you know, picked up riding when they were a teen, fell in love, and have been doing it ever since? Wow.
No, because we grew up very poor in and I was in an apartment building, so it would have been hard to have the horses upstairs. And so I found them later in life. I was getting out of the entertainment business, the film business in California. And I said to my dad, I'm going to run off and be a cowgirl, I think, even though I don't know anything about horses. So I signed up at this Wild Horse Rescue. They put me in a round pen, a 60-foot round pen with a helmet and a wild horse, and said, you better breathe, and you better, your thoughts, your feelings, and your actions should be the same, and the horse might trust you enough to get the first touch. Not only did that happen, but I realized all my childhood trauma sort of got brought up and then settled. And I said, well, this is the quickest therapeutic thing I've ever done. So I ran back to Antioch University, got my degree in marriage and family therapy.
Where is that? Where is Antioch?
So I'm still in Los Angeles at that time, although they have several Antiochs around the country.
Right.
And then started doing equine therapy, if you will, in Malibu.
In what year?
Started a nonprofit. Oh, my gosh, this is about 12 or 15 years ago, and we started a nonprofit, a friend of mine, and called Big Heart Ranch, and it's still there and doing well. It's in Malibu, and we provide all kinds of animal therapy to all kinds of people who are looking to be able to struggle well and find connection, not control. You never can control a horse.
Struggle well, I've heard that before.
Yeah.
Tell me about, before we talk about you and kind of getting into therapy and all that, tell me about your life in film. And what did you do, and did you enjoy it, and has that experience impacted the rest of the things you've done in your life?
I think everything helps you. It depends on how you look at it. Absolutely. From theater to film, I did a lot of work during the AIDS crisis. I actually opened the first condom store in the United States.
What?
And I went around the country.
Did you say condom?
Condom.
Hello?
Condom.
Hello?
Yeah.
Condom store.
Yes, I said. Condom store called Condomania.
How was business? Was it good?
It was. I don't want to say the words up and coming, but it was, and it was great.
I can't believe you just said that on my show. What the hell?
Well, get your mind out of the gutter, Michael.
I walked right into that, didn't I? I walked right into it.
You did. So, and it was so important at that time. People were dying, and you couldn't get condoms unless you went behind a pharmacist, and then you had to say, give me that extra small over there, and everybody knew. So I did that, and I did a lot of performing. I actually did a presentation on safer sex and sexuality and that. So my film business came after that, and it was wonderful. I did enjoy doing some script doctoring. I did have two films made, and I liked it. I had a TV show and a radio show for a while in Los Angeles. That was fun.
Nice.
It just didn't seem like it. It's all very self-serving if we're not careful. I mean, it's really hard to keep a perspective about yourself and what's important in life when you're on television and when you're in that business. So I left. I just said, you know, this isn't purposeful. And I left looking for something, and that's why I walked right into that round pen with that wild horse and taught me about what it's like to truly create the person you want to be.
Okay, so tell me, I want to hear about that experience before we talk about you kind of ministering to others. So you go out there to be a cowgirl, and so what kind of trauma are you carrying with you? Are you cognizant of that you need to deal with this trauma, or have you stuffed it in the closet and, you know, put a good sturdy chair, and that's in the tradition of Vietnam veterans, stuff that stuff in the closet, get a good chair up against it, and don't go near it. Okay. All right.
Don't go near it, and then try to overachieve it. So in other words, what I kept doing was I became a human doing instead of a human being. And I believed that I was only as valuable as the last thing I just did. And it's like Chinese food. You're hungry an hour later. So I just, you know, I was running. I was literally running from thing to thing and tried to find that value in myself because of the trauma of my childhood, which is I was very devalued by one parent, and I was uber valued by another. And that causes a lot of struggle, if you will, especially with your own sense of self. So I certainly did that, and I certainly had to crash and burn at some point, which I did, and that's when I went into that round pen. That's when I was looking for some way
to build
myself.
So you were looking
for something.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so had you had any experiences with horses, or were you just going out there? So the first time?
A couple of trail rides, you know, when you're younger, you go to a resort or something, get on those poor horses.
That's what East Coast people do. That's what East Coast people do, right? You go to the Poconos.
Right.
We see that in movies and about you guys. And so, so tell us about the experience. So you go out there to be a cowgirl, and all of a sudden you have this different experience. What was it about the experience that impacted you so profoundly?
So trauma creates a sense of self that is dependent on what other people think of you, which is the definition of codependence, that you only like yourself if everybody else likes you, that you will completely transform and morph into what other people want you to be. And, of course, that's not going to be very successful for you. You're going to be up one minute, down the next, changing all the time and not really finding a sense of self. And when you walk into a ring with a wild horse, because it's not codependent, you know, dogs are. We've already taken dogs out of their pack. You can get upset, come home, yell at your dog will apologize. It needs you. It wants your validation, and it wants you to care for it. Horses don't care about that, especially a wild horse. They don't want to be a part of you unless you are a safe, courageous, smart leader. End of story. That's all they want. They're not going to follow you or get near you if you are not, if your thoughts, your feelings, and your actions are all one. So here's what most people think. Don't show when you're scared. The horse will take advantage of you. That's not true. It's actually not true for most animals, except humans. We'll do that. So your thoughts, I'm scared.
Right.
Your actions are you're scared, and your feelings are you're scared. And if you stand in that round pen and just breathe, and you literally, which I did, talk to the horse and say, look, I'm really nervous about this. I'm not here to hurt you, and I'm not sure what to do. So let's work this out. And what you learn to do is put a little pressure on the horse just by moving towards it a little bit. The horse will watch you. And when you put too much pressure, it's going to have to leave. It's going to have to walk away. So your job is put enough pressure on them so they'll look at you but not leave, and you leave. So that's the release. So I go towards the horse. It's watching me. I say thank you, and I walk away. And the horse takes a step forward going, hey, wait a minute, you didn't do anything bad. Where are you going? They want to be part of a herd. They absolutely believe in connection. They know they won't survive without it.
So this is the conversation you have with the horse the first time.
That's right.
And then what happens?
So then what happens is I might ask the horse to walk to the left. So I'll kind of walk towards its butt, and I'll ask it to go to the left so it starts to move away from my pressure.
Right.
The minute that it does what I want it to do, I back up and say thank you, and I walk away. And the horse takes a couple of steps towards me to say, oh, is that all you wanted? Mm-hmm. So I might go back and say, okay, let's go to the right. And I walk towards its butt, moves away from me because that's pressure. And I might make it go around the round pen once. And once it comes back to its spot and it looks at me, I walk away again, and I say thank you. So the please is the pressure. The release is the thank you. And if you think about it in our lives, Michael, we are either so anxious that we're pressuring ourselves and everybody else, or we're so depressed we are releasing ourselves and anybody else.
Okay.
We don't have a balance.
All right. So you go and you have that experience. How does it impact you as a person who's dealt with trauma in your life?
So what trauma does is it, especially in childhood, what it does is that it applies too much pressure to you. It gives you predictions that bad is going to happen, or that you were bad and that's why it happened. And then you might feel hopeless or so despondent that this happened that you don't try anymore. You don't want to be involved anymore. You will give up on yourself and others. So that fear and sadness that happened during the trauma, when it's unwitnessed, unacknowledged, and unprocessed, will turn to anger. And then you're walking around in your life believing that you are wrong, they are wrong, you are bad, they are bad, and that anger comes out in everything that you do. And then people think they can manage anger. Well, Michael, if I gave you a blue and a red crayon, I know you would figure out you could make purple. Then I take the blue and red crayon away, and I say, okay, change that purple. And you'll go, well, give me the crayons back. But I don't. So we ask people to manage anger, especially our veterans. Manage your anger. Go to anger management. Yet you can't manage anger because it's created from unwitnessed, unprocessed fear and sadness. Now, when was the last time when you were in the military someone allowed you or encouraged you to talk about what you're afraid of? When was the last time in the military that you ever heard anybody want to sit down and talk about what you were sad about?
Yeah,
certainly not downrange.
No, we don't talk. Well, you may talk about it with really close friends,
right.
things that have impacted you deeply. And I think if you don't develop those kind of relationships, especially if you go back multiple times,
right.
you will, I think, slowly but surely, it's hard. I mean, those are not, especially if you're in the business of helping to kill people on a daily basis and helping to save people on a daily basis, that's a rough business to be in. And if you're in any part of that, I think there's only so long you can do it before you do. Your sanity is in incredibly impacted by it.
And so what's interesting is we keep using anger, not realizing that it is made up of fear and sadness, and not just from downrange. It is also brought into the military from our childhoods.
Yeah,
so here's one thing that Boulder Crest discovered, which was when I first started doing retreats for veterans, I was actually doing them in Malibu before Boulder Crest opened. And I would see all these, quote, PTSD symptoms, unquote. And they also look like the same symptoms from child abuse, child neglect, sexual abuse, divorce, poverty, drug and alcohol addiction of parents. So I start asking the questions, not what happened to you downrange. I want to know what happened to you in your childhood. And all of a sudden, out of 12 guys sitting there, I'd say, how many had, you know, were physically abused as kids? 10 out of 12 hands go up. How many were emotionally abused? 10 out of 12 hands go up, or maybe 12 hands. How many had addiction in the family? All the hands are going up all the time. And then I ask the quintessential question, how many of you were sexually molested as kids? Not one hand goes up until I put my hand up. And then one other soldier put their hand up. I'm a civilian, I should say. A soldier put their hand up. And then another and another. 8 out of 12 put their hands up. I didn't expect that. And then I kept doing it and doing it and doing it, and I would get the same roughly percentage. And I went, oh, my God, what if they went into the military with this trauma? The military used it well, not in a bad way. I'm not saying anything bad against the military. You guys are hypervigilant. You know how to deal with trauma. You're protectors because you were in your families oftentimes.
But we don't know how to deal with trauma. We don't deal with it. Right.
You're right. Keep going. You're absolutely right. You know how to fix it. You know how to fix the problem, not the trauma, not the effects of trauma, but you know how to be a protector.
We know how to paper over it and keep doing what we're doing.
That's true, but as a child, you actually might have been the person that was. Now, that's not true for everybody that went into the military. That's not what I'm saying. What we do know from the research is that somewhere between 30% and 45% of men and women that go into the military do have horrific childhood trauma.
Well, I would tell you, before I say this, first of all, Susie, tell everybody what your connection with Boulder Crest, because I failed to yank that out of you yet, and we're almost 15 minutes into this. So tell everybody what you do for Boulder Crest.
So I'm a PATH guide, and PATH stands for Progressive and Alternative Training Healing Heroes, not therapies. We actually thought when I first came on board, and I was there the day it opened, that we were going to do retreats that included progressive and alternative therapies. And as a licensed therapist in two states, I was one of the people that said, no, don't do therapy. You have to give a diagnosis. You have to only talk about the problem. You can't be directive. You've got to take notes. I mean, it's just horrific. You have to call names. You can't do the training that you men and women know how to do in order to get stronger physically, emotionally, intellectually, spiritually. You know how to do that.
All right, so you've been doing this with Boulder Crest in Virginia for how long? Since?
Well, from day one. So 5 years we've been open.
Okay.
And I have participated in every PATH retreat that we've done.
Okay. Do you ever come out to Arizona and do anything out there yet?
Just left there. So we did 6 family PATHs. So not only do we do a 7-day retreat, which then starts an 18-month support after the 7-day retreat for female combat veterans and male combat veterans. We also now do a family PATH where the parents come as well as the children, and they spend 5 days with us. And we go through much of the same training, post-traumatic growth training, that the combat veterans go through in their PATH. So we have warrior PATH, and we have family PATH.
And your official title at Boulder Crest is?
Old Gray Mare. I'm the only civilian on the team, and I'm the only woman on our program team. Not the only woman that works at Boulder Crest, but the only one that works in the PATH programs in Virginia, and we have one in Arizona. So my title, I just like to be like everybody else, because you're a team. So we are all PATH guides. We've all been through the program. I actually helped create it because we started doing these types of things in Malibu, and then we brought much of what we did to Boulder Crest, and then thank God for Ken Falk, because he went around the country looking for the best of the best of what we should be doing.
Right.
We were always strength-based and solution-focused, always. We knew that we didn't want to go back into the trauma and talk more about it. We wanted to talk about what you did well because of the trauma. How did you get through that? It didn't kill you. What did you do to be stronger? And I didn't even know. As a licensed therapist, I was never trained in a 30-year science that is part of psychology called post-traumatic growth. And Ken found that with Dr. Rich Tedeschi and Lawrence Calhoun, who coined the term. Right. So we designed our PATH retreats to facilitate applied post-traumatic growth.
Okay, just so everybody knows, her name is Susie Landolfi, and we're talking about the work that she's done initially on her own, but has taken it to Boulder Crest Retreat. And so now that we've done that, I want to go back to the issue of trauma. I think if you've been in the military for the last 20 years, and you spent time in Iraq, Afghanistan, or wherever the hell we're fighting, and you've done that, you've experienced suicide, and you've experienced people that have had meltdowns, and you inquire about it, because we want to know if they really went through enough to rate to kill themselves, okay? And so we begin to ask questions, like, you know that guy? Where was he? What year was he there? What time of the year was he there? Well, there was a shit going on while he was there. He doesn't rate to kill himself. What's his deal?
I know.
So we do this. And not And we do judge. We do judge. I will say that. And so what you find when you pay attention is that he couldn't have killed himself over what he saw over there. So what was the deal? And then you would find so often, and this is just, I'm not a therapist, although I do play one on the radio. I don't even play therapist because we're like heavy-handed therapists, all right? And so to use your term, like, I like that. Like, no, we don't do therapy. If we did therapy, God, it would be that. We don't want to do that. We want to do this. And so what you would find so often is that there was some sort of structural damage done at a very early age. And this additional stress that was laid onto that infrastructure, in addition to what they'd already experienced, was too much. And then you went, but we saw this. I've seen it over and over and over again. Right? And in my own life, my older sisters, two children, 4 and 6 years old, were murdered by their father. They were both shot in the head. And then he put a gun in his mouth. And so, I mean, I tell people when we talk about trauma that there's a couple important realizations for veterans. And this is my amateur therapist or whatever I consider myself. One is that just because you got yours in combat doesn't make you anything special. There's all kinds of people that are walking around you on a daily basis that have experienced excruciating trauma. Some magnitudes beyond yours. Two, if you can get your shit together enough to be able to help other people a little bit, right, you will find that your heart, when you do that, grows like the Grinch's heart when the Who people sing. So make yourself better. Get better. Well, how do I do that? Well, I can recommend a whole series of ways that you can do it. Boulder Crest Retreats. But everybody's got their own path. So I'm encouraging you to find what you need. Don't quit, right? Improvise, adapt, overcome, do all the things that we know how to do, because there's all these other people out there that need your help, that could use your help, that could use a helping hand, that could use a steadying hand, that could use an encouraging hand to help them do the same. And so I started this All Marine Radio thing, and our audience was veterans, trying to make sure, or at least try to reduce that 20 a day down a little bit by talking about these issues of trauma, how we deal with it. What I found, the epiphany, the great epiphany, is that we are people that live purpose-driven lives. We look for purpose in life. And we have a natural audience that's waiting for us to get our shit in one sock so that we can help them, because we have a credibility because we're combat veterans. And they could use our help. And it is exactly in line with the way we view our lives. But we don't have people preaching that gospel to us. We have people that want to give us a bag of drugs, right?
That's right.
That turn us into zombies, that send us to group therapy so we can hear other people bitching about something and maybe learn something from it, I guess. But we don't have people that are helping us find solutions and get ourselves pointed in a direction where we can coexist with our trauma and live great lives as other people before us.
You're absolutely 100% right. So you go to get help, whether it's the VA or any other therapy organization. Not only will they give you the drugs to try to mitigate some symptoms so that you feel a third bit better, and then I can say I'm a success, they will also tell you and assume that your trauma is from the battlefield. They will take the greatest thing you've ever done, one of the greatest things you've ever done for most veterans, combat veterans, that's what they tell me,
right,
that we would go back again tomorrow. So how is that the worst thing that's ever happened to them? They were valuable, purposeful. They were trained for that. And now we give them the pills and take away their greatest gift that they've ever done for themselves and for somebody. They took away their value. So what you're saying, Michael, is exactly that. And not only that, if they get hurt on the battlefield and they come back home, this is how I describe it. If they went into the military at 17 years old, to escape the trauma of what's going on in their household. They are sent back to the scene of the crime. They have a crime that no one has ever heard, a crime that no one's bothered to ask about. And in 1 week, we help these men and women process that, understand it, share it with someone else, so they can move on and do what you're talking about. And they can go, you mean there's nothing wrong with me? And as a therapist, when I say there's nothing wrong with you, I mean it. There is absolutely nothing wrong with you. It's what happened. It's what happened to you, and now it has to be about what happens. And that's up to you. And that's exactly what you're talking about, Michael. We transform all those gifts, all that strength, all that wonderful training that you had to do something that most people could never do and will never do. And you come back home, and we desperately need you. We need you. You are leaders. You are courageous. Not only that, you are compassionate.
Have you read the book?
You know how to work in a team.
Have you read the book? Have you read the book Tribe by Sebastian Younger?
I sure have.
You know, he said that to me. I'm interviewing him, and he said, and I said, but Sebastian, they don't want. And he's talking about acceptance and blah 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 that he writes about in his book. I said, but Sebastian, they don't want us in our. And they don't want us. They're afraid of us. And he said, I know. And he said, and now. You guys are creating your own subculture. You even have your own radio station, for God's sakes. The Marine Corps has its own radio station. Like, whoever thought that would happen? Why? Because you guys get each other. And you're afraid that if you're honest with people, they're going to look at you and they're going to cringe and run. I said, we're not afraid of that. It's simply a part of our lives. We've lived it. So why do we want to go there? And he said, because they need you. And I said, they need us, but they don't want us. And he said, yes, they're afraid. I said,
afraid.
Okay, so where does that leave us? What do we do, force ourselves on them? And so it's been interesting, you know, my kind of epiphany through all this, because what you're saying, the reason I love Boulder Crest so much is that, you know, before them, I would tell you that the best things about post-combat related mental health that I heard were simply the oral traditions that were handed down in through enlisted men, through officers that Vietnam veterans passed, from Korean War veterans, from World War II veterans, right? Hey, you'll never get over this. The best you're going to do is coexist with it. What? What does that mean?
I know.
What does that mean? Like, why would you say that to me? Because it's the truth. Who told you that? Vietnam veterans. Okay, well, now you got my attention. And then I find out it's some of the most profound advice I've ever received in my life, and it's full of wisdom. And when it reaches out and grabs me, because I didn't know I had, like, a menstrual cycle, you know, but I do. There's some days, right, when I think about it and I can feel the pressure behind my eyes. There's other days I talk about it and it doesn't bother me. Why is that? Well, because, Mac, you have a menstrual cycle. And some days it'll be okay. And when it's not okay, just look at people and say, I'm allergic to cats, so I'm tearing up, that's why. And then go about your day. But there's nothing wrong with you. This is normal if you're a warrior.
That's
it
right.
Is. But they don't tell us that, Susie. They still don't tell us that.
I know. And I can only tell you, as a licensed therapist who is doing training, one of the things that I want to do more and more is I need to sit down with my peers, and I need to tell them, and they deserve to hear this, that they're going about it in a way that is so hurtful and isn't working.
It alienates us, right?
Exactly.
And so to me, the VA ought to be world class in prosthetics and dealing with amputees, with traumatic brain injuries, with burns, and with post-traumatic and post-combat related mental health. That would be world class. Your hemorrhoids, your hangnails, your psoriasis, all that gets farmed out to somebody else. Give them a program called Vetacare, all right? Go get it taken care of.
Right.
But when you come here, you're going to be blown away by what we do. And when you walk in, you're going to hear these things, and they're going to make sense to you, and you're going to know that you're back with your tribe and that your tribe loves you. Unless it's an anomaly, that doesn't happen to the majority of veterans. And all they want to do is stop medicating me. I need to talk to somebody that can help me process this experience and point me in the right direction. And Boulder Crest.
And clean out your home. Right. And clean out. And Boulder Crest does that. You're right. It is a direction. And we are going against the tide.
No, you're not. You're going against the institutional tide, but you are on the crest of. You are on the crest of. And I'll just tell you this, and then we have to take a quick break, and we'll come back. This epiphany of rape victims need us, right? My sister needs us. So you can put your hand on their shoulder and say, it's okay, right? Time doesn't heal all wounds. God has not invented the quantity of time that is going to heal my sister's wound. Okay? But you can do great things. You can learn to coexist with it. And when you feel terrible, that's okay. That's a part of it.
Okay.
And they look at you and they're like, who are you? What are you saying? And what resonates with them is the truth. They know the truth.
Uh-huh.
And it's so... Like, that question, like, who are you? Who is that white guy? Who are you? Like, where did you come from? What are you, like, Clarence from It's a Wonderful Life? You're my guardian angel? Like, who expected this to happen today? And the truth is so powerful, and people that suffer from trauma or live with trauma, they know it when they hear it.
Yes, they do.
Now, Susie and I have never met. We sound like we're, like, soulmates, okay? We've never met. We're going to take a break.
Not in this life yet.
We're going to. More of Susie Landolfi coming up next on All Marine Radio right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nelson. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led into Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you. And we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255. And press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warriors Radio Network.
You can tell, like, I love horses. I really don't. They scare the shit out of me. But this is horse music from the Magnificent Seven. Yul Brynner, right?
Yeah.
Filming in big, what, northern New Mexico in Butte country, riding across. You can see me with my cowboy hat, the front bill kind of blowing in the wind, coming right over that low rise. Yeah. Me on a little Joe's Pinto pony. Anyway, we continue. We're talking to Susie Landolfi. She from Boulder Crest, that is a favorite of All Marine Radio. And we've been having our own, like, I don't know what we would call it, soul, some kind of telekinetic meeting of the brains here. But I want to switch gears because I love doing. If you can't tell, Susie, I moderately enjoy this. It excites me. Okay, so talk to me about. Most of us have a decent understanding of what happens at Boulder Crest. Tell us how you have kind of woven horses into this. And are horses the only animals that you've woven into this? This path,
yes.
Program?
Yes, and for a reason. Like I said, I'm an animal lover, and I love dogs, and I know that dogs will not hold me accountable like a horse will. So what we're looking for now is accountability. We also place the horse session, the time that they have with the horse, specifically at a certain time in their retreat when they have already disclosed about their childhood, learn some emotional regulation practices, that they're already sort of realizing now what are the PTG, the post-traumatic growth practices that they deserve to learn and do on a daily basis in order to create the life they deserve. So when we're ready to introduce them to people outside of their team and us, who do we choose for the first being for them to meet? Our horses. And I jokingly are truthful with the men and women and say, look, we know you're just learning these practices. You just figure out it's not what's wrong, it's what happened. And we know you're not quite ready to go home and meet people yet. So we're going to have you meet our best co-workers, which are these four-legged wonderful animals, because we know that they won't lie to you. They will tell you the truth of how you are behaving, how your thoughts, your feelings, and your actions are coming across. And if you're not congruent, if you're not a true leader, meaning being able to lead yourself out of your own, depression or anxiety, they're not going to follow you. They're not going to participate. So that's why you use horses. Horses are going to demand accountability and authenticity. That's what they demand. And they want a good leader. So they're not going to follow you unless you are. So if you're walking backwards, holding on to a lead line saying, hey, you want to come with me? And the horse looks at you and says, no, because you just asked me if I wanted to, and I'm saying no because you're walking backwards. So why would I follow someone who's walking backwards? No horse would ever walk backwards and another horse would follow it. Because they would say, you're going to go over the cliff, dude. get your act together here. And if you're too anxious, they're not going to follow you. Why would they? They're not anxious, so they're going, I think you need to calm yourself down. And the real interesting part of these horse sessions, Michael, is that when they go in, the very first thing we ask them to do is meet and greet the horses. They're in a pasture or in our arena with no lead line or halter on. And we said, go introduce yourself and find the horse that's most like you based on their behavior. And they do. And then we ask them which horse. And then they ask them why they picked that horse and what was the behavior. And then we tell the veterans the backstory of that horse. And guess what happens? This is all happening in 15 minutes of them meeting these horses. The backstory of that horse always, I'm not saying mostly, I'm saying always matches the backstory of that veteran.
Come on.
And not only that, how they are in the herd, so going back to Sebastian Unger's tribe, how they are in the herd, how that horse is, what the horse's job is, what their fear and sadness is in the herd, is exactly how that man or woman is in their family and in their life. So if we have a horse that is very anxious about being left and is always trying to corral the other two horses and making sure they're okay and stay there, that is going to be that person who picks that horse. Now, they don't know that's going to happen. I know it's going to happen, but I don't pick the horses for them because that is the energy that we carry around. And the horse reads energy. And you're reading the horse's energy, but you don't know it. So when you pick that horse, you are literally thinking you're picking it on one little part of the horse's behavior, when in fact, you're picking the whole horse and the energy. What is that called? It's called intuition. And that intuition is one of the greatest of the, what I like to say, six senses that we have. And you guys use it all the time in the military and don't even realize it. So why wouldn't we bring that back to you and have you understand that it works? You know, when you walk into a room, you can feel the energy coming off of somebody else. And you got to start using that. And your kids are reading your energy when you walk into the room. So let's make sure we're using every bit of us when we create the life we deserve. So that's the first thing we do.
Okay.
The second thing we do is we teach them how to walk the horse with a halter and a lead line. But that's just sort of part of the myth.
Okay.
Because once they walk that horse with the lead line, we take the lead line off. And we say, now you're a leader. And if you're a true leader and you walk with your thoughts, your feelings, and your actions being one and being safe, that horse will follow you without that lead line. Now, of course, they don't believe it until it actually happens. So they are the equipment. You don't need a halter and a lead line with a horse. Because we're all about connection, not about control. There isn't one thing that we talk about at Boulder Crest during a path retreat that is ever about control. It's always about connection. And when those men and women start walking across that pasture with a horse they met 20 minutes ago, and that horse is following them, that is one of the biggest aha moments about how they are literally carrying themselves physically, emotionally, intellectually, and spiritually. And the horse will read it. We also put them on the horse. Actually, we don't put them on. Their team has to put them on a 19-hand, 2,000-pound horse named Danny Boy. And the only way they can get up on that bareback horse is if they ask the other five members of their new fire team to get them up there. They have to figure it out themselves. We have a halter and a lead line on Danny, and they have to get up there. And they do bareback. And we say, you can't ride a horse. There's no such thing as riding a horse, actually. You can ride a motorcycle,
right,
which I just did today, and you can ride a bike, but you can't ride a horse. You move with the horse. That horse has a brain and thoughts and feelings. So you're working with it. You are connected to that horse. And there's never, ever controlling a horse. Not really. You can train it. But there's no bit that will stop a horse that wants to run if it feels it needs to protect itself. And there's no saddle that'll keep you on if that horse wants you off. I don't care who you are. So the only thing you've really got is connection. And that's what we do. It's a remarkable moment to watch these men and women come in contact with these very large, honest beings and find out how much they teach them how to tell the truth.
Okay. So we then begin to translate those behaviors, or are you illustrating using the horse? You're drawing that out. It becomes an example.
Right.
And then,
exactly. You use the same thing with the horse, with your children, and with your spouse, and with your family, and with your friends. Use exactly the same practices that that horse has shown you works in terms of connection, honesty, kindness, leadership in terms of integrity. See, leadership is just about integrity when you think about it. Say what you mean, mean what you say, don't say it mean. Do what you say you're going to do.
All right, so from there, and this is all part of the, okay, now what I want you to do, Susie, is describe this module and how it fits in, so you just kind of alluded to how it fits into the week and how this module fits into the horizontal theme. So after the week is done, right? Can you explain to everybody what else happens? It's not kind of catching the lease at Boulder Crest.
No.
You explain to everybody what happens after they physically leave the premises?
Well, we can, because one of the things we realized was when I was making my transformation, when I was creating the person I deserve to be based on principles and wellness practices, as opposed to basing it on the fear and sadness from my childhood and the anxiety and depression, I had to do things for quite a while in order for me to have them truly become a part of my life. And that's true when you went to basic training and everything else you do in the military. The more you practice something, the more you do it, the easier it becomes, and then it becomes a part of you.
Right.
So all these wellness practices we talk about, from the PM to honest and open, courageous communication and accountability, breathing, literally learning how to breathe correctly, and finding this pressure and release practices. What we realized was we're just planting seeds during that 7 days. And truly, you do feel better. In 7 days, you feel remarkably better. And then you're going to have to go back into an environment that's going to challenge you and has been challenging. So what we learned was that 18 months is about the amount of time all of us need to say, wow, I really, really am so different after 18 months of doing these wellness practices. They really become a part of me. We also know that you guys know what a fire team really is and how you get to stay together and support one another. So that concept of the six men or six women staying together, in contact, doing practices, going through the curriculum again, studying more about post-traumatic growth, reading more books, watching more videos together, and having discussions and support. So that when you might have a slip, when things start to feel a little bit imbalanced again, you've got five other guys or women to call. Say, hey, I'm not doing well right this minute. I get to ask you, I got to go talk to my wife about something and I'm really upset. So here's what I want to say. And your five members go, oh, wait a minute. You sure you want to say that?
Right.
What else might you want to say? And then you talk about it.
And
you go have the conversation.
And then,
you come back and go ahead.
And then over the course of that 18 months, this training that we're so familiar with, that has been part of our lives. We've been introduced to it via many of the same kind of vehicles, and now we continue to practice it. And over the course of that extended period of time with our Boulder Crest Retreat Fire Team, we begin to navigate life applying these principles, being reinforced by our fire team in all the ways that we know, and then it becomes part of our life.
That's true. So to do a catch and release made no sense. I actually think that it's unethical. I truly believe that we should follow what worked before with training.
Right.
And that consistency and that support for 18 months, that is absolutely the difference of what Boulder Crest offers. And I'm very proud of that. I'm so proud to be part of something that we recognize that we're going to put our energies into a long-term relationship, not just a good feel for 7 days, and I can walk away and go, oh, look what we did. Isn't that wonderful? And everybody's feeling so much better. And then not have any contact and find out that actually that we calced a little bit and not enough.
Would it surprise you to know that there's a group of five of my friends and I that text almost every day? We're all battle buddies. We're all battle buddies from Afghanistan. And
you know,
we just most of us just got together in North Carolina because one of our friends took over the 2nd Marine Division down in, at Camp Lejeune. And so we went down there and saw each other. And one of my friends said, you know what Napa man said to me? I said, what? And he looked at me and said, do you know how important that text window is to me? Like, no. You need that kind of abuse on a daily basis? He said, no. No. Like, if I don't check in, like, Mac will yoke me up. He will start going, like, where are you? What are you doing? What's wrong with you? And I get in trouble.
That's right. And right, see, so you should get in trouble. Where are you? Why are you not calling me?
Yeah, why?
You guys are the best mothers I've ever met.
We call it River City. Why are you in River City? I'm not in River City. Yes, you are. I know River City. You're in River City. What's going on? The interesting. You know what? So let me ask you a couple final questions. My guest is Susie Landolfi. She's a senior path guide. I know that because I'm looking at the Boulder Crest website right now. She said she was a path guide. She didn't say she was a senior path guide. So she's a
Did
senior.
Did you just call me old?
No.
Do I get a discount for this? A senior discount for this?
You can go eat at 2 o'clock with everybody else if you want to. But no. Senior is an experience.
Okay.
What is the first step, Susie? What is the first step? And I'm not necessarily talking about, you know, because there's so many people that struggle and then quit. They quit the VA. And I have a little piece of audio that from a guy named Jeremiah Workman, and that I play during my show. And it's essentially advice from Vietnam veterans. And give me 1 second, and I'll play it for you. Here it is, Jeremiah Workman talking about advice that he got relative to PTSD.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, you know, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain. It's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
The number of people that have that experience and have to live their lives like that by walling it off, much like you did, that you told us earlier in the program, is not a small number, right? I go to the VA, and after the fourth time I see my fourth different therapist, I've got my fourth bag of drugs, and I say, I'm not doing this anymore, and I quit. What do you tell people that that's where they are in terms of dealing with trauma in their life?
You know, the first thing that I do is I apologize. I tell them that I get why they don't want to do that. I totally understand, and I apologize to them. And I'm saying, I'm sorry that that's what's being offered. You deserve better. You deserve better. And then what I try to do is say, what is it that you want to do? That's my second question. What do you want to do in order to create the life you deserve? Because you guys know how to create a mission and then follow through. You know how to do that. You don't need to come to an expert. You are the expert. All that I get to do is to walk alongside you and maybe on some level say, well, what else do you want to do? How can I help you do that? What do you need? Here, let me hold your pen. You know what I mean? It's like you don't need that. And then all we do is say, okay, what do you need to complete that mission? What is it that you need? And they'll say, well, I need to focus more. Okay, let's get some meditation in you. Let's do some breathing. Let's get rid of the adrenaline running through your system all the time. Are you willing to do that? Do you want to do that? And they'll go, yeah, that's a good idea. Because you know what to do. So I think what we have to start doing, Michael, is giving you guys experts and we're actually grading you with the idea that I know better for you. You know what you need to do in order to get the mission accomplished. All I get to do is be there in any way and support you. That's it. You know what to do. That's the very first step. You know, bring back that knowing that you guys have. You have it. You have experience. You have knowing. You're wise. You're the most competent people I've ever hung out with and worked with.
We are
I hate going back into the civilian world.
We are pretty macho and studly, I'm not going to lie to you. So, Susie, and you know what? So much of that comes with there's nothing wrong with you. You become a warrior. And so your life's going to be different. Your experiences are different, and they're never going away. And so, but that's okay. So to me, when, you know how when you say that to somebody and you can see them go, you can see them like exhale and you can see their body physically like compress a little bit and they're like, I was so worried. And I always say, hey, do you watch the History Channel? And they say, oh, yes, sir. And I say, those sissies from World War II, they're still crying about that. Right? It's okay. Hey, sir, they're not sissies. I know that. Okay? But if they were, they're still crying. Yours happened 3 weeks ago. Right? So you're going to learn. We're going to help you learn how to coexist with it. But there's nothing wrong with you. Well, there really is, but you're just like the rest of us. So it's okay. Right? And they laugh.
It's just what happened.
And they laugh. And they're like, oh, shit. Sir, I'm like,
I know.
Why didn't... And then you see him a few weeks later. Hey, sir, right? Hey, what's up? Can I ask you a question? Like, yeah. Why didn't anybody else tell me that?
I don't know.
I said, because
that's what I apologize for.
I'm really smart. I don't apologize. I just tell them how smart I am because I'm like Sigmund Freud smart. Susie Landolfi. Okay, Susie, the final question.
Yes.
What haven't I been smart enough to ask you that you need people to know before I let you go?
I haven't even been smart enough to ask me. You haven't been smart enough to ask me, Michael, when are you going to get your spot in the warrior path? When's it going to be your turn? Because you deserve it.
Yeah, when is it going to be my turn?
There you go. So here's what we're going to do, Michael. To end this lovely conversation, I'm going to tell you that I'm going to get on the horn with all of my coworkers, and we are going to actually find that date, those paths that have some openings, and we're going to email those to you so that you can actually experience them. You've been such a great friend to Bouldercrest. We can't thank you enough, and you're super wise. You came up with this all on your own, and that, again, just proves that you don't need a bunch of experts with letters at the end of their name. You guys know what to do, men and women. And all you do now is you just meet people that appreciate you and want to walk alongside you while you're doing it.
You know, and the important thing, Suze, is that we need to become exporters of this because the general population doesn't hear this. And we are looked up to as warriors, as combat veterans. And when you do put your hand on somebody's shoulder, and I had a friend who just, this just happened to him the other day. He said, you know, Max, she was 19. And we started talking. I was downtown. And the subject of trauma came up. And I started talking to her. And she looked at me and she said, who are you? That's exactly what I feel. That's exactly what I think. There's so many people that can use us. And he was on this incredible natural high the rest of the day and for the next. I mean, he's still on it because he touched somebody's life.
Right.
Is there a better high that you get when you touch somebody's life and you see that light flicker?
None. And you've done that for me with this conversation. I can't thank you enough. I hope we'll do it again.
You're a charmer. You're just trying to make up because you're from Massachusetts. I'm not that easily duped, Susie. Please don't. Show some restraint. I hope you don't mind if I ping you in the future when subjects come up and your expertise would. I would love to have you back on. You've been a great guest. All right. Well,
thank you, Michael. No. Bless you.
Thank you for doing this.
My pleasure. Take care.
That is Susie Landolfi. She's a senior path guide at a place called Boulder Crest Retreat. You can find them on the internet. You can look at pictures of what they do. They have a place in Virginia. They just opened up, I want to say, within the last 6 months, certainly within the last year, their place in Arizona. You can go online and look at both places. You can look at the programs they have. You can look at ways for you to take action, host a fundraiser. They have internships, and then you can read about everything they do. It's one of the best programs I've seen relative to post-traumatic growth. And her name is Susie Landolfi, Landolphi. She's a senior path guide there. So, more of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.